So today we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter number 10, entitled Departure of Lord Krishna for Dwarka, Text number 6. Nadayo vyadaya klesha, daiva bhutatma hetava, ajata shatra bhavan, janjunam rajni parhichet. Na, never. Adayaha, anxieties. Vyadaya, diseases. Kleshaha, trouble due to excessive heat and cold. Daiva bhuta atma, all due to the body, supernatural power, and other living beings. Hetavaha, due to the cause of. Ajata shatrav, unto the one who has no enemy. Abhavan, happen. Jantuna, of the living beings. Rajni, unto the king. Karhichit, at any time. Translation by Swami Srila Prabhupada. Because of the kings having no enemy, the living beings were not at any time disturbed by mental agonies, diseases, or excessive heat or cold. Purport. To be non-violent to human beings and to be a killer or enemy of the poor animals is Satan's philosophy. In this age, there is enmity toward poor animals, and therefore the poor creatures are always anxious. The reaction of the poor animals is being forced on human society, and therefore there is always the strain of cold or hot war between men, individually, collectively, or nationally. At the time of Maharaj Yudhishthira, there were no different nations, although there were different subordinate states. The whole world was united, and the Supreme Head, being a trained king like Yudhishthira, kept all the inhabitants free from anxiety, diseases, and excessive heat and cold. They were not only economically well-to-do, but also physically fit and undisturbed by supernatural power, by enmity from other living beings, and by disturbance of bodily and mental agonies. There's a proverb in Bengali that a bad king spoils the kingdom and a bad housewife spoils the family. This truth is applicable here also. Because the king was pious and obedient to the Lord and sages, because he was no one's enemy, and because he was a recognized agent of the Lord, and therefore protected by him, all the citizens under the king's protection were, so to speak, directly protected by the Lord and his authorized agents. Unless one is pious and recognized by the Lord, he cannot make others happy who are under his care. There is full cooperation between man and God and man and nature. And this conscious cooperation between man and God and man and nature, as exemplified by King Yudhishthira, can bring about happiness, peace, and prosperity in the world. The attitude of exploiting one another, the custom of the day, will bring only misery. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmalita Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Nadhayo Vyadaya Klesha Daiva Bhutatma Hetava Ajata Shatrav Abhavan Jantu Nam Rajni Kharichit. Because of the kings having no enemy, the living beings were not at any time disturbed by mental agonies, diseases, or excessive heat or cold. So believe it or not, I mean, this sounds like these days impossible. We have never experienced anything like this in our life. That in the whole of the world or in the country, every living being is free from mental agony and diseases or excessive heat and cold, heat or cold. So we have never experienced like this and anything like this. So it's very difficult to imagine that such a time did existed. But as we can, in this section as it's described in the previous two verses and this verse, in this section it's described that such times did exist because of the piety of the king. So in other words, the king could have such an effect on nature. In the previous verse we heard how the rivers, the oceans, the hills, the mountains, the forests, creepers and active drugs, in every season they paid their tax quota to the king in profusion. So, and in this purport, Srila Prabhupada gives so many managemental principles how to be Krishna conscious, how to run a family, how to run a country, or how to even govern the whole world. So these purports are some of my favorite purports in this section, especially the text number 4, which Kana Prabhu gave a class on Monday. So here we see that it's mentioned that because of the kings having no enemy, the living beings at any time were not disturbed by any mental agonies or they didn't have any disease. So this tells us a lot about the kings or the leadership. So in the days of yore, the leadership of the kings were very pious. In other words, they were pious means they were devotees. Real piety means service to the Supreme Lord. That's what real piety is. Everything else is impiety, whether it is auspicious or inauspicious, materially. So the Vedic kings, they were actually very pious. In other words, they were an Uttama Adhikari. So an Uttama Adhikari is one who is the highest kind of devotee. So as we know, there's the three levels of devotees. There's the Kanishta, Madhyam and Uttama. So the Uttama's vision is the highest. And they have actually developed love for God. So such kings were actually fully Krishna conscious. They were on the platform of pure devotion. So their mood was actually to love others. So if everyone has this need of love, and in modern society it's very difficult to tell the difference between love and lust. Everyone takes lust to be love, or in other words it's sentimentality, it's sentiment, or it's an agreement of so-called love. But actually what it is it is actually lust. So everyone has this need for love, and the kings, especially the leaders, understood this principle. So their mood was actually of giving. They would base their behavior on genuine empathy and concern for others. So they actually knew that we are not simply the body and the mind, but we also have a divine aspect to ourselves. We have the spiritual aspect to ourselves. So they understood that within the body of each and every living entity, there is the spirit soul, which is the real identity, and also there is the supreme soul situated in every living entity, in the heart of every living entity. So their vision was not simply the bodily platform. The leaders of today, their vision is just the bodily platform. What they see is they take the body to be the self. Therefore they try to nourish people's body or utmost their mind. So there's nothing beyond this, or maybe the intellect. So these days modern society is catering for people's bodily comforts, their sensual needs, they're catering for their senses, the sensuous desires, their mental satisfactions, you know, poetry, art, or different kind of things, and their intellectual needs. But there's nothing catered for their spiritual needs. But the spiritual leadership, they actually understand that that we are not the body and we have our spiritual needs. And because their mood was of genuine empathy and concern, therefore they gained a lot of loyalty and support from the dependents. And these days, the leadership, they're very, very self-centered. And therefore they cause a lot of disharmony, resentment and disloyalty. So these days we see the citizens, they don't have faith in the leadership. In fact, these days to take a leadership role is very difficult because no one has faith in the leaders, whether it is religious leaders or political or economic or social leaders. Because everyone is in the bodily concept of life, therefore they naturally have to be self-centered. They cannot be selfless. So naturally then there's a lot of disharmony, resentment and disloyalty. And we see it like Maharaj Yudhishthira and his brothers when they were forced to go to the forest for in exile for 13 or 14 years. When they were going to the forest, it's described that all the citizens, they followed Maharaj Yudhishthira to the forest. And then Maharaj Yudhishthira had to tell them, no, you know, please go back. I will go with my four other brothers and my wife. So the citizens were actually very loyal to the king because the king was very selfless. The king was concerned not only with their material needs, but even with their spiritual needs. And such kings, they would see the divine nature of all living entities. They would see that within every living entity there's a soul, and they would see God in everyone's heart. So this is also the vision of a yogi described in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Or even in the 5th chapter is described, Vidya Vinaya Sampanne, Brahmane Gavi Hastini, Shuni Chayavash Vakecha, Pandita Samadarshina. So a self-realized soul, he actually sees the Supreme Lord present in everyone's heart. So whether it is in a Brahmana, or in a king, or in a cow, or a dog eater. And such a personality understands that different living entities have, according to their karma, different kinds of bodies. And within their bodies, the Supreme Lord is situated as their real friend. Suvedam Sarvabhutanam. So the Supreme Lord is situated within the heart of every living entity as the Paramatma, as their friend. And different jivas have different bodies according to their karma. So in other words, a spiritual leader, he does not discriminate against the bodies. As Prabhupada mentions, Prabhupada opens the purport by mentioning, to be non-violent to human beings and to be killer or enemy of the poor animals is Satan's philosophy. So such kings, they would see everyone on the spiritual platform. Therefore the dependents, the Sanskrit word for dependent is praja. So any living entity which is born in the kingdom or state is to be given protection. Unlike today's society, barbaric society, in which only a select few human beings are given protection and the rest are exploited and the animals are killed in mass numbers. So if you can look at the statistics that every year like billions of animals are slaughtered just to satisfy the tongue of human beings. So because people do not have this vision and the current leaders, they do not have this divine vision, therefore they think, because they are based on the bodily platform, they think, okay, such and such living entity is my friend and such living entity is my enemy, and therefore I can eat him. And kings like Maharaj Yudhishthira, they would see everything in relationship to Krishna. So they would see all living beings situated in Krishna and Krishna within the heart of everyone. And they would see Krishna everywhere. In other words, when the vision of a conditioned, there's a difference between the vision of a conditioned soul and the vision of an enlightened soul. So an enlightened soul sees everything in relationship to the Supreme Lord. So when he sees the material energy, he sees that Krishna is the controller and proprietor of the material world. Isha vasyam idam sarvam yad kincha jagatam jagat tena tektena bhunjita ma grida kasya svidhanam. So he sees everything that is, everything what he sees is owned and controlled by the Supreme Lord. There's also that very nice verse by Lord Brahma, Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilojanena Santa Sadaiva Hideyeshu Vilokayanti. That, in other words, such a soul, because his eyes are tinged with pure love of Godhead, he sees Krishna everywhere. So whether he sees the trees or the plants or other living entities, it actually reminds him of Krishna. And he or she understands that this energy belongs to Krishna, therefore I should use it in Krishna's service. And such an enlightened being even sees Krishna within their heart. And Prabhupada gives the example of, in his heart there is television broadcast. So such a being can see the Supreme Lord and his pastimes happening within his heart. And when he sees the material energy, he actually sees it as spiritual, meant for the Lord's service, not for his own exploitation. But the vision of a conditioned soul is that when such a person sees the material energy, he thinks, okay, this is for my pleasure, it is for my exploitation, how I can make the most out of it. So therefore, such a person sees in duality. He cannot see everything perfectly. Actually, it's described that such a person sees everything with differentiation. So therefore, such people, they discriminate. Okay, the human being, he's my friend, but the animal is my enemy, therefore I can eat him. So therefore there is this discrimination between animals and human beings. But a king like Maharaj Yudhishthira, because they are on this Uttamadhikari platform, they have the ability to love everyone. So but the first thing is that we have to love ourselves, then only we can love someone else. Unless we have something, how can we give it to someone else? If we are lacking something, we cannot give someone that thing. So such a person first acknowledges that he is a servant of the Supreme Lord. So a king like Maharaj Yudhishthira, they acknowledge that they are the spirit soul and they are the servant of the Supreme Lord. And the goal of life is to be a servant of Krishna. Unless one is convinced of this fact, one cannot teach others this basic principle. So the duty of a king is to see that everything in the creation cooperates to serve the Supreme Lord. So whether it is the trees or the animals or the different varnas in society, everyone is basically cooperating to serve the Supreme Lord. And Prabhupada gives example of different limbs of the body. So we have the hands, the legs, the nose, the ears, the stomach, everything is acting in a cooperative way to serve the body, to serve the complete entire whole. So in the same way, everything in nature is meant to cooperate and serve the Supreme Lord. And when that happens, the Supreme Lord actually gives protection. So the role of a king is very unique. So as Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj explains, that a king is standing in the middle ground. So he's standing in the middle ground between the spiritual kingdom and the material world. So a Krishna conscious king is accepting blessings and realizations from the higher realms and he's passing it down. And at the same time, he's accepting the service from his dependents and passing that service up to Krishna. So the kings in the Vedic times, they knew how material nature worked. They understood how material nature works, as is described in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. The system of material nature is explained, where there are demigods who are in charge of various aspects of the creation, or there are demigods who are in charge of administration, and above the demigods is the Supreme Lord. So if we simply serve the Supreme Lord Krishna, then everyone else is satisfied. And therefore there is a profuse supply of all the necessities of life. And the kings understood that material nature actually works under the control of the Supreme Lord. As Krishna mentions, Maya Dakshina Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam Hetunena Kaunteya Jagat Viparivartate. That this material nature, which is one of my energies, producing moving and non-moving beings, is acting under my direction. So Krishna says that material nature is not independent. Material nature is working under my direction. So then Krishna has this system of demigods. Because Krishna does not directly interfere with the workings of material nature. So Krishna is in the background, and by his will this material nature takes place. And there are demigods who are in charge of it. So Krishna is simply there in the spiritual world, and he's enjoying his pastimes with his devotees. And he has these demigods who have this, who want to control and want to take such a position. They are given such a position so that they can exercise their tendency. So there's also this pastime of Maharaj Prithu and Bhumi Devi. Where we can see how this system works. So when Prithu Maharaj, he was put to the throne, he ascended to the throne with his wife. Was what was his wife's name? Does anyone know?
Archie.
Archie, yes, yeah. She was the goddess of fortune. So when he ascended to the throne, after King Vena was dethroned, he was approached by the Brahmanas, he was approached by various citizens of his state, and they were basically complaining to him that we are actually in a position of starvation because the previous ruler was very impious, and therefore the earth did not supply sufficient grains and herbs and all the natural resources which are required for sustenance. So he was approached by these citizens who were complaining that that, you know, you are the king and you're supposed to protect everyone else. You're supposed to make sure that no one is in starvation, everyone has all the material necessities, but how come we are starving? And King Prithu actually took it very seriously. So this is a Vedic king. The responsibility of the king is not only his spiritual responsibility, which is to make everyone Krishna conscious, but even to make sure that everyone is comfortably living in the state. Everyone is comfortably living so that their minds will be peaceful and they can execute Krishna consciousness. So no one is supposed to be in hunger. There's supposed to be no starvation. So, and King Prithu was very shocked, and he took it very seriously that my dependents are suffering. And then he contemplated on this for a while, and then he understood that because that Bhumi Devi is not releasing the grains and the herbs and minerals and everything else. So then he took up his bow and arrow, transcendental bow and arrow, and he was about to kill Bhumi Devi. And then Bhumi Devi took the shape of a cow, and she pleaded to Prithu Maharaj, "Why are you killing me?" She said that, "I'm a woman, and you're a king, you're meant to protect, you're meant to uphold the religious principles, and I'm in the form of a cow, how can you kill me?" Actually, before that is described that Bhumi Devi ran for her life, and Prithu Maharaj chased her, and that chase went all over the universe, and when she was tired, she surrendered to Prithu Maharaj. And then Prithu Maharaj told Bhumi Devi that I'm going to kill you because you're not supplying the grains and the herbs and the other necessities which the living entities need. And he said that we are doing the yagyas, we have done all the yagyas, and you have taken your share of sacrifice, and still you're not releasing the grains. And basically what she said was, the reason I'm not releasing the grains is because the living entities are in your kingdom, some of them are atheistic. I'll read out what she said to Prithu Maharaj. So she said, "Grace sages say that human society can prosper by offering in sacrifice to the Supreme Lord the grains and herbs I produce. That's why I provided these things abundantly in the past, but now, my dear king, all the seeds, roots, herbs and grains I've produced for sacrifice are being used by exploitative atheists opposed to spiritual life." And then she says, "Not only are my grains and herbs being wasted for sense gratification, but I'm not being properly maintained. The leaders of the world don't care about the pain they're causing me. They stand by indifferently, refusing to punish the rascals who steal the gifts I have offered my human children for their spiritual welfare. The negligence of the leaders fosters greed and destruction. Such leaders encourage thieves to use my offerings for their own pleasure and indulgence. That is why I have hidden all the seeds." So we can understand the current situation of the world by Bhumi Devi's statement. So the gifts of nature are actually meant so people can execute Krishna consciousness peacefully. That's the whole idea. As also Krishna mentioned in the third chapter, that if one takes the gifts of nature from the demigods but does not offer them back to the demigods in yagya, then such a person is a thief. So in today's society, everyone is a thief. Because no one even acknowledges the demigods, what to speak of offering in yagya. So everyone is more or less a thief. And our leaders are the biggest thieves. Because they're not encouraging yagya. And our leaders are atheists. And Prabhupada also said that the current food crisis is not because of a lack of supply. That's one reason, a lack of supply. And the other reason is because of mismanagement. And that's because the way our current economic system is set up. So in the Vedic times, the economy was agro-based. So we know there's the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Shudras. So the duty of the Vaishyas is cow protection and it is agriculture. So these are the two main functions of a Vaishya. Agriculture, cow protection, and then the other things related to this, which is trade and business and banking. But that's in relationship to agriculture and cow protection. And even not many years ago, say in the early 1900s, during the British rule, the Indian population was agro-based. Most of the people were engaged in agriculture. So the modern the governments or the economies, they are based on industry. That's the main difference. So the modern economy is based on industrial development and commerce. And agriculture is minimized. Though they do understand the importance of agriculture. Agriculture is not mainly to supply the basic needs of people, but agriculture is to support industrial development and commerce. So the way modern economies work is they don't want the majority of people to work on the farms. In fact, a developed country is one in which only 5 or 6% of the population is engaged in agriculture. And the other 95% is working in corporations, or factories, or offices, or whatever. So modern governments don't want people to live in the country and farm. So one will think, why is it like that? The reason is, and even these days, there's a lot of surplus production of foodstuff. It's not that these days there's insufficient production of foodstuff. There is surplus production also, but the government withholds that surplus production of food. And the reason for that is because it wants to support the industry and the other corporations. Because the farming is, these days it's commercial farming. So commercial farming means it's all about profit. So you have your food processing industries, you have your industries which produce insecticides, pesticides, fertilizers, and then there's the transportation involved, and everything is based on profit. It's not based on supplying people food so they can have a healthy life. So that is actually secondary. The main thing is profit. So when there is surplus production of food, the government buys that food and stores it in the warehouses. And the reason for that is, it doesn't want to, if there's too much food available in the market, then the prices will go down. And when the prices go down, all these corporations will go bankrupt. And when they go bankrupt, the entire economy will be crippled. So the government is forced to withhold the foodstuffs, the natural produce. So they store them in their big warehouses. And they can easily, the governments these days, they can easily get rid of hunger. For example, even in the United States, there's the hunger problem. There are many people who are hungry. And the United States has food surpluses. It's mentioned that the United States has so much food that they can feed so many African countries which are starving of because of lack of food. They can feed like 60 countries. So definitely, certainly they can feed their own population who are starving. But the reason they don't do it is because they don't want to cripple the economy. So if they give out the food to their people, then the local businesses will be in loss. Or if they give out their food to other countries, then the international trade will be affected. So sometimes these countries, they'll take the food and they'll throw it in the ocean. So the food crisis is because the world food crisis is because it's simply because of mismanagement, as Prabhupada says. So because the leaders are very greedy and everything is based on profit, and therefore there's mismanagement. And also there's that pastime of a brahmana who accused Ugrasen. In the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there was one brahmana who gave birth to a child, and when the child touched the ground soon after birth, that child died. And then that brahmana took the child to King Ugrasen in Dwarka, and he told the king that, how is it that my child has died untimely? In other words, he held the king responsible for the death of the child. These days so many people are dying, so many living entities are dying, and the king is, or the prime minister is not held accountable. In fact, the prime minister is sanctioning slaughterhouses. Is the exact opposite. So there's nothing to be proud of today's society. If we have this pride in us, we are living in a very civilized society. Actually, we are living in a barbaric society, where the prime minister or the leadership has so many enemies. They have created so many enemies because they are very self-centered. And even so many people see them as enemies. They have enemies and many people see them as enemies. So in this pastime, the brahmana approached King Ugrasen and said, that how is it possible that my child has died, that my newborn has died untimely? By nature's course, first the father must die and then the son dies. But in this case, the newborn died and the father is still living. So the Brahmana thought, how is this possible? The reason this has happened is because there's something wrong in the management of the king. So he went to King Ugrasen and he accused him with very harsh words. And he called King Ugrasen Brahmadvishaha, which means that he accused King Ugrasen of being envious of the Brahmanas and the Vedas and the Brahmana caste in general. And he also called King Ugrasen Satadhi, which means falsely intelligent. So a king is supposed to be intelligent and a king is supposed to see to the comforts of the citizens. So he accused him of being falsely intelligent. And then he accused King Ugrasen of Lubdha. Lubdha means greedy for material enjoyment. So he said, you're simply concerned about your own comforts and you're not concerned about your praja. And then he accused him of a Kshatriya Bandhu. Like we have Brahma Bandhus. A Brahma Bandhu is one who is a Brahmana by name only. So a Kshatriya Bandhu is one who is a Kshatriya by name only. So in this way he accused King Ugrasen. So then he went back home. Then he conceived another child. So the second child died in the same way. And then he took the second child to King Ugrasen and said, you know, what's happening? So like that, the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh and eighth. Same thing happened. And then when the ninth child was born, again the same thing happened. And then he took it to King Ugrasen again. And at that time, Arjuna and Krishna happened to be present there. So then Arjuna heard the Brahmana accuse King Ugrasen. And then he approached the Brahmana and said, how come you're accusing the Kshatriyas? Don't you think we can protect the Praja? And he said, we are accepting the sacrifice and everything, but we are protecting. He said, but the Brahmana said, Krishna could not protect, Lord Balaram could not protect, King Ugrasen could not protect. And he said, how do I believe you are going to protect? Mm-hmm. So Arjuna said, I'll protect your child, your next child, I'll protect him. And the Brahmana had actually lost faith in the Kshatriya kings. And the Brahmana said, I will not believe you. If such great personalities, Aniruddha, Pradyumna, they could not protect, who are you to say that you are going to protect my child? You are just an ordinary personality. These are the supreme personality of Godhead. They could not protect. So Arjuna said, Arjuna, to instill some faith in the Brahmana, he said, I defeated Lord Shiva in a fight. And Lord Shiva, he gave me his own weapon, the Pashupata. So he said, now you conceive a child and you call me when your wife is about to give birth to a child, then I will come there and I will protect your child. So the Brahmana felt somewhat assured and he went back. And then after some time the Brahmana summoned Arjuna. Arjuna came and then Arjuna shot his arrows in the sky and he tried to protect the child, but when the child took birth, the child and his arrows both disappeared. And then the Brahmana accused Arjuna. He said, see, I told you, you can't protect my child and you have failed. And Arjuna had taken a vow that if I'm unable to protect your child, I will jump in the fire and I'll kill myself to rid myself of this sinful contamination. So Arjuna thought, okay, the child and my arrows are missing. That means they're somewhere in the other planets. So Arjuna went to Yamraj. He went on a search. He went to Yamraj's planet. He couldn't find the child. He went to many of the demigods' planets. And he even went to Brahma Loka with Krishna and he couldn't find the kid and his arrows. And then Arjuna was about to commit suicide and Krishna said, wait. Krishna said, you come with me, sit in the chariot. We'll go and see Mahavishnu. And Arjuna was like, okay. And then they went north. So they went to the end of the universe and they went through all the layers of the universe. And then they reached Brahma Jyoti. They were outside the universe and they reached Brahma Jyoti. And there they saw a palace in the Karna waters. And there was Mahavishnu being massaged by Lakshmi. So, and then Mahavishnu said that I actually stole all the nine children, the nine babies. He said, because I wanted to have darshan of Krishna. I wanted to see Krishna and Arjuna. And then he gave them the 9 children back, and they went back and returned the children to the brahmanas. So the point is, it wasn't just a cheap thing to become a leader or a king in the Vedic times. If you take the position of a kshatriya, kshatriya means to protect one from harm. You have to see that your dependents have been protected from harm. That there is enough food, there is enough clothes, no one is disturbed by mental anxiety, there is no disease, and the temperature is also perfect. Though the nature of this world is that this world is a place of suffering, there's the threefold miseries, and there's birth, there's old age and disease. But a king like Maharaj Yudhishthira, he can reverse that by his management. And it's also mentioned that the king embodies the protective energy of Krishna. In the pastime, between Kardama Muni and in the discussion between Kardama Muni and Swayambhuva Manu, when Swayambhuva Manu wanted to marry his daughter Devahuti, so he came down to the planet Earth, and there he searched for Maharaj, for Kardama Muni. And before that, Kardama Muni had a darshan with the Supreme Lord, and he asked the Supreme Lord for a suitable wife. And the Supreme Lord told Kardama Muni that Swayambhuva Manu will come and he'll give you his daughter who's qualified, so you marry her. And then Swayambhuva Manu, he came down and he approached Kardama Muni. And when he approached Kardama Muni, Kardama Muni glorified Swayambhuva Manu, and he said that the tour you have undertaken, O Lord, is surely intended to protect the virtuous and kill the demons, since you embody the protecting energy of Sri Hari. So the Kshatriyas embody the protective energy of the Supreme Lord. As Krishna also mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, Paritranaya Sadhanam Vinashaya Chadushkritam. So the reason the Lord comes to the material world is to protect the devotees and to annihilate the miscreants. Paritranaya Sadhanam Vinashaya Chadushkritam. Paritranaya means to offer protection. So the way the Supreme Lord offers protection is through the kings. And we also see that many times when the Supreme Lord descends, he assumes the role of a king. Maharaj Prithu, Lord Ramachandra, even Krishna later, he took the role of a king, so they can offer protection to their devotees. So the way the Supreme Lord offers protection is through the Kshatriyas, he offers protection through the Brahmanas. And the Brahmanas are offered protection through the Kshatriyas. Because the Kshatriyas and the Brahmanas are the energy of the Lord. So the Supreme Lord offers protection through His energy to all the living entities. Generally, the Supreme Lord does not directly interfere in the workings of material nature. So He offers protection through His energy, which are the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas. So the Brahmanas give guidance to the Kshatriyas. And then the Kshatriyas apply those principles, and then they protect the Brahmanas. So the Kshatriyas are considered to be the arms of the Supreme Lord. And the Brahmanas are considered to be the face of the Supreme Lord, or the head. So the purpose of the head, or it's described the purpose of the face, is to glorify the Supreme Lord. So when the face speaks, glorifies the Lord, and gives guidance to the Kshatriyas, then the Kshatriyas, the arms, they protect the rest of the body. So even when there's a fight, I don't know if you've been in fights, but I've seen some really serious fights back in school, in my school days. And what I observed was, when someone is being bashed by a few people, what they do is they protect their head with their arms. That's the part of your body you want to protect. Because if your head is damaged, basically you can't function. So in modern society, the head is damaged. There's no head. In fact, the arms are also not there. The leg has taken the position of the head, and therefore there is chaos. So Prabhupada said, our goal is to create the head in society. And once the head is created, they will create everything else. So I'll stop here and see if there's any questions or comments. Yes, Prabhupada.
The Shastras tell us that Krishna is the supreme controller of everything. So I'm wondering, does that mean Krishna should get the credit for our successes and our failures? All of them?
A devotee, if anything good happens to a devotee or anything bad happens, he sees it as the mercy of the Lord. In fact, for a devotee, there's no good or bad. Everything is auspicious because the devotee sees the hand of the Lord in his life, his or her life. And the material conception of life is to take credit for our activities. What's that verse? Prakrite kriya manani naya kramani sarvasha ankar vimod atma kartaham iti manyate. That when one is in the material concept of life, he or she will take credit for his activities. They think they are the doer. But when one is enlightened, one understands that Krishna is actually the doer. We can simply desire and the Supreme Lord carries out that desire. So a devotee gives credit to his spiritual master and to the Supreme Lord. Anything else?
Do you comment? Although I'm sorry, I missed most of the class. Srila Prabhupada said that nowadays tendencies to grow cash crops. Cash crops.
Yeah.
Like tobacco and coffee.
Mm.
So because they get a lot of money, so they're ignoring the other crops.
Mm. Yeah, one time Prabhupada was in Mauritius and he was giving a talk in the temple and there were many leaders of that country present.
Yeah.
And he said, I've seen in your country that you're growing a lot of sugarcane. Sugarcane is a cash crop. He said, first grow what you need. First grow the necessities you need. And after that, if you have sufficient for yourself, then you can grow sugarcane. That's right. So, yeah, it's good.
The other comment was, I know the people who are Germany, their farming is done mostly by people live in the village, 90-95%.
Hmm.
And very few people are in urban area. So they grow and they have got industry in their villages.
Hmm.
And they have got very fast transport.
Yeah.
So they transport to the main city and they get out. All their construction, beautiful houses they have got in the villages.
Yeah.
And they live so operatively, you know. That's why they're burning the economy so high. They are giving shelter to all these countries now. They're telling economy. Like Greece, Spain, so many other countries. So because they are driving the economy.
But the problem with that is majority of people are in the cities and they are dependent on someone else for the employment. So there is always threat of unemployment. Only few people can live nicely in the country, but the vast majority are in the cities. And they are dependent on someone else for the employment. In ancient days, everyone was independent. The way things worked was on Ishavasya principle. The king would understand that everything belongs to the Lord. So there was no concept of ownership. This concept of ownership is actually it's recent. So the way things worked was the king would give the citizens a piece of land. He has a piece of land. Now, and he'll give them a few animals. Now you cultivate the land and you live on that. So everyone was independent. No one was dependent on someone else. Everything was very decentralized, or yeah. So if you see the Indian village model, everyone was independent. I remember when I used to go to some villages in India, people have land, they had cows, and they don't have to depend on anyone else. But these days we are depending on so many other people and they bump up the prices.
And you are going downhill like anything, in spite of the best culture.
Hmm.
Yesterday somebody was telling me they are making such horrible movies. Why? Because in public demand, those things, so they are making such money. So culturally we are most advanced, and now because of the social and whatever financial, can you really turning fast? Big cities like Bombay and Calcutta and all these places. Horrible places.
And in fact, this concept of ownership increases our illusion even further. Because our philosophy is Ishavasam Idam Sarvam. The Supreme Lord is the controller and owner of everything. But when we, for example, buy a property or car, then it makes us think that we are the owner. Because this is in the law now. Ownership is legalized. Before it wasn't legalized. Before everything was owned by the state, and the state was ruled by the king. And the king knew that everything belongs to the Supreme Lord. He had that consciousness. And he would give the citizens, okay, you take this land, you grow, and you give me 1/4 as tax. So everyone was independent and no one thought they are the owner. They knew everything belongs to the Supreme Lord. So these days it makes it a little bit more difficult for even devotees. Because we buy a property, or we have some possessions, and what is mine is not yours, and what is yours is not mine, legally. So we always have to be conscious that we are not the proprietor. Everything belongs to the Supreme Lord and we should use it in the Lord's service. Otherwise we will be very quickly entrapped by Maya. Okay, we should stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki.